So normally around camp time, usually right before camp or right after, I like to do a sermon that's connected to our theme for camp. Today I'm going to be doing something from what we did at camp. We're going to be looking at a text from Matthew chapter 10. The reason I'm doing this, I'll kind of explain why I picked this particular one a little later, but this was one of our, this is one of the passages from one of our devotions that was in our camp booklet that we gave all the campers and family leaders led them in. And we're going to be looking at this text this morning. This is a passage where Jesus talks about confessing me before men. And as we get into this text this morning, I want to give you kind of a lens to look at this verse through, because there are a lot of passages in Scripture that if you just read them kind of without any context, that they're kind of complicated. So it's really important as we get into this text this morning that you think about this passage in the context of a relationship. Because if you don't think about this text in the context of relationship, then this verse doesn't make as much sense. Okay, so that's really important. We're talking about a relationship between Jesus and his followers. And a lot of times, I think too often in, and I'll just use the big generic term, religion, we don't think enough about the context of relationship. We think about the rules, and we think about what we can do and what we can't do, and we really don't think about the importance of the relationship between God and his people. So that's kind of an important element of this. Now, kind of in setting this text up, Jesus has been talking about the cost of discipleship. If you go back and read verse 26 through 31, Jesus gets into the fact that you're disciples and you know, there may be people trying to kill you, but don't fear the person that kills the body, but fear the one who kills the soul. And so he's been talking about all of that. And so as he kind of moves out of that, he segues into this statement. So let's look at verse 32. It says, "Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven." Now, there's not a lot of nuance in that text. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? If you confess me, I'll confess you. If you deny me, I'll deny you. But when we get into the relational element of this, I want you to think of it like this. Imagine that you're married and you run into a friend of your spouse's one day, and you find out they don't know that their friend is married. Now, how many of you would immediately think, why didn't you tell them you were married? Why didn't you tell them about me? And immediately, what does your mind go to? You're ashamed of me? It was like, you don't want anybody to know about me? And by the way, it's the worst thing in the world, right? If you go somewhere and it's like, oh, this is my boyfriend. This is my girlfriend back here. And they're like, oh, I didn't even know you had a boyfriend or girlfriend. And then you're like, they didn't know. I'm trying to imagine when me and Stephanie started dating, and if we had gone somewhere and one of her friends would be like, who's that? Oh, that's my friend. Friend? Boyfriend. It's my boyfriend. I didn't even know you had a boyfriend. You know how mad I'd have been? You know how to, I'd be like, why are you not telling your friends about me? And then it would kind of be obvious, wouldn't it? But, I mean, but really, would that not, how many of you would be okay with that if you were in a relationship with a significant other and they were not telling people about you? No hands, but none of you'd be okay with that, all right? So when we read this text in the context of a relationship, what is Jesus saying here? If you're going to be in a relationship with me, Okay? If you're going to be in a relationship with me, and that relationship is going to bear fruit, you're going to witness about me, and you're going to tell people, and I'm going to give you forgiveness of sins and the gift of the Holy Spirit, and we've got this mutually beneficial relationship. If this relationship's going to work, what you have to do is be willing to admit you're in a relationship with me. Because what does it say to Jesus when you don't want to admit you're in a relationship with him? Well, if I was Jesus, I'd be like, well, you don't love me? You're not even willing to tell people you're in a relationship with me? Now, I just want you to take a minute and think about this. How many times have you found it awkward or uncomfortable to acknowledge to people that you were in a relationship with Jesus? Now, if you sit there and you start categorizing, you're like, well, there are some awkward situations, right? There's some awkward circumstances when you have friends who are engaged in things that Jesus wouldn't be happy with. It was funny because I got in the office this morning, and a lot of times when I'm going back over my sermon, I'll get on YouTube and I'll just listen to some Christian music on YouTube. And this morning, just because sometimes this happens, this song came on from, oh, I won't say my youth, I guess it's really my late 20s. There was a group when I was in my 20s called DC Talk. Now, DC Talk were a bunch of hipsters. They were, Aaron's over there going, whoo, she loved DC Talk. I've seen them in concert a few times. They were really good. They were really big in the 90s. I mean, they were really big. They played on Letterman. They played on Leno. They were even on Arsenio Hall. If any of you remember Arsenio Hall. They were big time. And one of their biggest hits was this song called Jesus Freak. Do any of you remember? Any of you ever heard of that song? Some of you are going, what? Jesus Freak? That's actually a term that originated in the 60s. But the whole context of the song was, what are people going to say when they find out I'm a Jesus freak? When they find out that I'm in a committed relationship with Jesus and I've given my life to Jesus, what are people going to say? And the context of the song was how people worry about what other people are going to do when they find out that they're Christians. So when you look at this text and you look at it from the standpoint of a person who is in a relationship, this text should make perfect sense to us, right? We understand exactly what Jesus is saying here. If you're not going to admit that you're in a relationship with me, then maybe what? You're not, right? If what kind of relationship are we going to have together if you won't even admit to your friends that I exist? I mean, normally, if you're trying to hide a relationship, why would you be doing that? Because you shouldn't be in that relationship, or you're embarrassed by the relationship, you're ashamed of it, or maybe you're worried about what the other people are going to say about that relationship. And so you know, and think about how that feels to the significant other. Now, you know, I remember first time I went to see Stephanie's parents. I went home with her to meet her parents. Now, the trick was I'd already met her parents because I'd been home with the twin sister to meet the parents. And so when I walked in with Stephanie, that was a little awkward. It was a little awkward, and true story, Stephanie will attest to this, I looked at her father, and I said, Mr. Titus, I just want you to know that if things don't work out with this one, I'm not coming home with your son. True story? True story? Yeah, you like that, Jim? Jim likes that. True story, that's what I said to defuse the awkward situation. I'll just tell you, didn't work, made it more awkward, made it a little weird. But that, you know, that's kind of thing. It's like if we get into a relationship and someone doesn't want to acknowledge the relationship they're in with us, we know exactly how that would make us feel. Okay? So when Jesus is talking about don't, you know, here's the cost of being a disciple, and don't fear those people who are going to try to kill you. And, you know, and that's an important kind of precursor to this statement. Jesus says the temptation is going to be, the easy way out is going to seem on a lot of occasions to just deny the relationship. And it may be as simple as what we call the sin of omission. It's not that I said I wasn't in a relationship with Jesus. I just didn't say that I was. So if I don't tell somebody I'm a Christian, it's not like I'm denying Jesus. I'm just not confessing him. But I want you to note that Jesus does not give any gray area between these two things. Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. Now try to imagine this scenario. You've lived your whole life as a quote-unquote closet Christian. You've hidden it from the people at work. You've hidden it from the people that would be weird about it, that would not agree with some of the stances that come with it. You've always done a really good job in separating those two worlds. I have my Christian friends. I have my non-Christian friends. And in a perfect environment, they never run into each other. I go to church on Sunday. But when people say, hey, you want to go somewhere with us on Sunday? You just go, can't, I'm busy. But you don't necessarily tell them why you're busy. So you've always done a good job of keeping those things separated. You've got the religious part of your life and the secular part of your life, and you keep them separated. So now, your day comes and you go stand before the Lord. And there's God sitting on the throne. Now, Paul says that Jesus functions like an advocate, almost like an attorney on our behalf, right? So you're standing before God, and Jesus steps out, and he says, I'm going to be your defense attorney. Oh, fantastic. Let's do this then. And God kind of takes the gavel and says, all right, who is this? And Jesus looks at you and then looks at the Father and goes, I have no idea. Now, tell me what would be going through your mind if you were standing there with your eternity on the line and you heard Jesus say, I don't know who this is. Now, what would you probably start to do immediately? You'd start to cry. Some of you might whine. And then we'd start doing this. Hey, hey, hey. Do you know how many, don't you remember when I went to church all those times? And don't you remember when I worked in the nursery and I even greeted some? And there was that one really weird Sunday when I had to play keyboards and nobody else was there. Don't you remember that? Don't you remember that? And it's like, no, I don't remember that at all. Well, don't you remember, I taught Sunday school that one time, and I got suckered into working church camp one summer. And by the way, thanks for not making it so hot. And you know, I did all these, don't you remember all these things I did? And Jesus looks at you and says, let me tell you what I remember. I remember the 50,000 times you pretended I didn't exist. I remember all the times when your friends were doing stuff that you knew I didn't like and you never once told them that I was part of your life. I remember all the times when your relationship with me was embarrassing or inconvenient and you didn't want to admit it or acknowledge it. That's what I remember. Now, some of you may be saying, I don't know if it works that way. This text certainly says it does, right? There's not a lot of gray area here. Everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who's in heaven. Now, over the years, I've heard people who thought this text had a lot to do about the confession when you get baptized. Like when people come forward and say, hey, I want to become a Christian. And so what do we do? What do we do? What's the first thing we do? We take what? Their confession, right? And so here's what happens with that. People say, okay, I'm going to stand up here in front of these church people and I'm going to say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. Two thumbs up, made the confession. And now I've covered Matthew 10:32. How many of you believe that covers Matthew 10:32? I don't think anyone in this room in their heart believes that making a confession before baptism covers Matthew 10:32. But I've heard people who that's what they thought it was. And there's so much more to it than that. So I don't want to kind of go down the rabbit hole today of going into all the different ways in your particular life that you can confess Jesus and the ways that you can deny him, because the truth is, I think all of you are smart enough to figure that out, right? You know, and by the way, there's more to confessing Jesus than putting a Jesus fish sticker on the back of your car. That's a nice little thing, or one of those little bumper stickers that says, my boss is a Jewish carpenter, or God is my co-pilot, which I've told you before, that's the dumbest bumper sticker in the world. God doesn't want to be your co-pilot, he wants to be the pilot. But that's a whole other thing. But the thing is that we've got all these things that we do, but the reality is, you know, everybody in this room knows the times when you have failed to meet the qualifications of Matthew 10:32 and 33. We all know. We've all done it. But I don't know that we actually think about the consequences of it, because it's a relationship. And because we're in a relationship, and let's just add something to it. What did Jesus do to make the relationship possible? He died for you, right? So now let's throw in the Lord's Supper. Let's throw in this commemoration, this remembrance of the sacrifice. So now that just amplifies it even more, right? In other words, now Jesus says, I died for you so that we could be in a relationship, and you still won't admit that I'm there. Well, that's awkward, right? So Jesus says, look, everyone who confesses me before men, I'm going to confess him before the Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I'm going to deny him before my Father who is in heaven. Now, if that's not bad enough, let's look at verses 34 and 35. He says, do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Now, let's stop for a minute right there. How many of you think that verse does not match what you have always believed about Jesus? Anybody? That sounds weird, right? Wait a minute. Isn't it in the Beatitudes, blessed are the peacemakers, right? Isn't that in the Beatitudes? So why would Jesus, who is always preaching peace, if a man wants your cloak, what are you supposed to give him also? Your tunic, right? Don't fight him for it. Just give him the cloak and the tunic. If a man tries to force you to walk a mile with him, what should you do? Walk two. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye. But I say to you, love your enemies, pray for your enemies. Now all of a sudden, what does Jesus say? Do not think that I came to bring peace on this earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Now listen to the next part. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Some of you going, got that one. And a man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Let's go back one slide, please. Now, I want you to think about this again in the context of a relationship. How many of you have ever fallen in love with someone that you were almost certain your parents were not going to like? Now, some of you, I'm sure, James, I'm sure she's not talking about you. When I was in high school, my mother's spiritual gift was snooping. If I went on a date, that woman, before I got home, would know who I was out with, where we went, what her address was. I mean, she would do, I'd come home and she'd go, "How was your date with her?" You know, just throw a name out. I'm like, "How did you know?" And she would just go, "I'm a mother." Like, what did the Lord tell you? I don't, how do you? And she always seemed to know. And I could always tell if what she had found out was good or bad based on the facial expression. And so it was like, "How was your date with?" And then she'd make that face, and I knew, oh, she doesn't approve of this one. By the way, she liked my wife. I'll go ahead and, she loved Stephanie. In fact, she liked Stephanie more than me. But the truth is, we've all been in those circumstances. How many of you have ever had a friend that you would not really think your other friends would like? You know, when I was young, I had learned, I had friends in all these different groups. You know, I played sports, so I had the athletic friends. But then I had the friends, what we used to call in Crestwell, the Hicks. Those were the guys with the great big tires on their pickup truck and the gun rack. By the way, we never had school shootings when I was in high school, and there was enough ammo in our school parking lot. We could have taken Columbia. If all the guys in school had just gotten in their cars and we had driven to Terrell County, we could have taken Columbia just with all the hunting stuff in the cars. So I have friends that were Hicks, and I had friends who were athletes, and you know, I had friends of different races and different ages, and because I just like to hang out with everybody. Some people, but sometimes you did not want to cross pollinate those groups. So if I was hanging out with one of my country friends, and we ran, you know, I saw some of my friends who were not of the country ilk, I might try to avoid them. Because I did not want to subject my friend to ridicule or myself to ridicule. Any of you ever do that? Yeah? Okay. So we understand that this scenario that sometimes we're in a relationship with somebody that's not going to go well with other people. Jesus says, "That's why I came. Don't think I came to bring peace on this earth. I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. And who where is that going to work? I came to set a man against his father." Now, as you hear that, and that sounds in your head like that doesn't make any sense, I want you to take a minute and think about this. You're a good Jew. You've been a good Jew your whole life. Your father is a good Jew. He follows the law. Your mother is a good Jew. She follows the law. And then one day, you come home and tell them that you are going to follow Jesus. And what's Jesus telling people? "Hey, don't worry about the law. You come with me. I haven't come to abolish it. I've come to fulfill it. I'm the Son of God." By the way, Jesus was considered what by the Pharisees? A blasphemer, right? Death penalty offense, blasphemer. So if you're a Jew on Pentecost and you accept Jesus on Pentecost, you get baptized, what is probably facing you when you get home? The wrath of Dad. Do you have any idea how many Jews got disowned by their families after Pentecost? It was probably a pretty significant number. And if you're thinking, "Well, that doesn't sound realistic," think about this. What do you suppose happens to an Arab person whose family is Muslim when they become a Christian? What do you suppose happens to that person? You think they get ostracized by their family? Or do you think their family's just like, oh, that's so neat. I like Jesus too. Is that how you think it goes in most Muslim families? Probably not. You think that's how it goes in most Buddhist families, most Hindu families? Probably not. Let's be honest, that doesn't even, it goes that way sometimes in secular families. Trust me, I've made enough of those calls at camp where a family that doesn't go to church sent their kid to church camp and the kid decides he wants to get baptized and I call mom there, they're like, he wants to do what? Absolutely not. I'm like, why'd you send him to church camp? Get him out of the house. You're laughing. I've heard that more than once. I mean, Jesus says, look, when you choose me, sometimes that's going to create conflict in your other relationships. It's going to pit a father against his son. It's going to pit a daughter against her mom. It's going to create problems between the in-laws. This is the nature of relationship with me. And would it be great if peace always ensued a relationship with Jesus? And by the way, people that we love to preach that, we hear it all the time, you know, about the peace and the blessings and all this stuff. And we completely forget how many Christians are executed or imprisoned per day in parts of the world where Christianity is not accepted or tolerated. There are Christians this week who are fighting for their lives in North Korea, Syria, Iran, China, who this passage makes perfect sense to them. I don't think I came to bring peace on this earth. I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword, and I'm going to set you against all these different groups of people when you accept me. That is, if you acknowledge me. Now, why did I pick this from all the stuff we did at camp? So I have this little story to tell you this morning. This is a true story. And this is a reminder of how the Holy Spirit does stuff sometimes, which still, even at 55 years old, I'm still amazed sometimes by the stuff the Spirit does. So in June, I sit down in the office, and camp's coming up. So this is probably the third week of June, and I start working on our devotions for camp. And so I'm going through the life of Christ, and I wanted, because we were doing a spy theme about being an agent for Jesus, and so I was doing a series of devotions in our camp booklets, our family devotions, on the life of Christ and some of the things he said that were kind of odd or interesting. And so I wrote four devotions, and I didn't put them in any particular order. They weren't chronological. I just wrote four, and I put them Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in June. So we fast forward to camp. It's Monday night, and there was a camper. I won't say the name because we're doing Facebook Live, but there was this camper that came up to her family leaders on Monday night, and she said, I've been thinking about becoming a Christian for a while, and I thought maybe when I got to camp I might want to do it. Can we talk for a while? So she sat down with her family leaders and talked about becoming a Christian. They came to me, said, Stuart, can you call the parents? I said, I'll call the parents. Monday night I called the parents. We're good to go. We're going to have a baptism. We're going to do it Wednesday because the parents couldn't get there till Wednesday. We're going to do it Wednesday. It's going to be awesome. Tuesday morning, one of the family leaders comes up to me and goes, we've got a little hiccup. I said, what's the hiccup? Well, the camper wants to get baptized but doesn't want anybody to see it. She's very, very shy and doesn't want everybody watching. And some of you can relate to that, right? Because you're like, oh, it's so weird being up in front of everybody. So this camper had told her family leader, she goes, I don't want to do this in front of everybody. Is that okay? So they came to me and said, what are we going to do? Is this okay? And I'm like, got 103 campers, supposed to do a secret baptism. I don't know how I feel about that. The parents going to show up? What, are we going to lock the kids in the cafeteria? So I'm trying to figure out logistically, am I okay with this? What are we going to do? How are we going to do this? And then I'm sitting there and I said, I'll get back to you at lunch. We'll talk about it at lunch. Give me the rest of the morning to think about this. So on Tuesday afternoon, we have our staff devotions where we go over the devotion for that night. So the staff comes in, we sit down and do the devotion together, and then the staff go that night and do the devotion with their family. Guess what passage was our devotional passage for Tuesday? Matthew 10:32. If you don't want to confess me before men, I'm not going to confess you before the Father. So I sat at lunchtime, I got the family leaders to get for those that family, and I said, I think our devotion is going to fix this. And they got their book out and opened it up and looked at it and was like, how did you know? And I went, ha ha, I didn't. But the Holy Spirit knew in June. How? And by the way, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. Sometimes, I mean, even at 55, the Spirit does stuff sometimes which just still weirds me out. But the Holy Spirit knew in June. You know what, Stuart, that's an okay devotion. Let's put that on Tuesday, because that's going to come in really handy on Tuesday. And again, no rhyme or reason for why it was on Tuesday. It wasn't in any particular order. I just wrote four and stuck them on days. So that night, the staff goes off to their devotion time. And when they come back in for worship, that family was a couple minutes late. Family leader came up to me, goes, I think our problem is solved. I said, really? And he goes, yeah. So after the devotion, this 10-year-old comes up to me and says, so that devotion, I get the distinct impression that it would really hurt Jesus' feelings if I wasn't willing to do this in front of everybody. And he said, that what you got out of the devotion tonight? And she said, well, that was one of the things. That was one of the things. But not just that, but when I go home and people ask me how was my summer, the first thing I should tell them is that I became a Christian. And he was like, that's a great devotion. And she looks at him and goes, how did you know? And he goes, I didn't. Isn't the Spirit weird sometimes? The way it just does stuff. And so when I was sitting there going, I wonder what message I want to do from camp for church. And I was like, oh, duh. Here's what's fascinating about this. In going over this passage, a 10-year-old got it. Right? 10-year-old got it. If I want Jesus to be happy in my relationship with him, then I can't make him feel like I'm ashamed of him. And you know why I know that? Because I wouldn't want to think someone I'm in a relationship with is ashamed of me. You know? I mean, I can just imagine how I would feel if one of you came up to me one Sunday morning and said, Stuart, I've got a friend, I want to invite him to church. What Sunday are you going to be gone? Because I don't want their first Sunday here to be you. I was thinking maybe Jamie. That would really hurt, by the way. Maybe Jamie, or maybe Smartick's going to fill in for you, or somebody else, anybody but you. What Sunday are you going to be gone? Now, should I be offended by that? Yeah, probably. I probably should be. If your spouse came up and said, "Hey, I got a friend I want to invite over for dinner. Could you possibly like go out to eat that night?" As a spouse, you would be offended by that, right? So we understand this. When the Son of God left heaven to come here and walk among man and give up his life in a painful death so that he could enter into a relationship with you, and then you accept that relationship, but you don't want to acknowledge that relationship, is there any other way Jesus could feel but heartbroken? And the answer is no. There's no other way he could feel. And so this week, as the praise team comes to lead us in our communion song this morning, as you go out into your life this week, whether it's work or whatever, wherever you go this week and you encounter people, here's what I want you to think about. Are you actively trying to acknowledge a relationship with God in how you move through your day? Or do you feel like sometimes you're trying to kind of quietly distance yourself from God around certain people? And it can be subtle, that there could be nuance to that. But here's the thing. Your eternity is at stake in this. Because someday you're going to stand before God and your advocate is going to stand beside you. And there's only two potential things he's going to say on that day. He's either going to look at the Father and go, "Hey, Lori Reed, my buddy, my pal, she always confessed me before her people. And so now I'm going to confess her before mine." That's one outcome. The other outcome is, this is, what's your name? I don't know this guy. He looks familiar, but I'm not sure I know his name. It may be because he could never remember my name when he was around his friends. Now, one of those two things is going to be said about you by Christ in front of the Father. Which one's it going to be?